Blog Talk Radio.
Time loop.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. I watched this show. I mean it, guys. I did. But for some reason, it like wasn't sinking in tonight. So we're going to see how well I remember any of it. I was just telling these guys before the show, I don't know why it is, but this one didn't stick. So let's find out together if it was any good. The Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams stuff is pretty good. I'm sure of that. This was your wraparound story and was peppered throughout, as this story has been, quite a bit. Who attacked Trick Williams and took him out of that championship match? And doesn't matter anymore since he's got another championship match anyway. But he's still mad. Ilya was carted out at the end of this show, Ilya Dragunov, for his showdown with Trick Williams. And Carmelo Hayes showed up to try to say that Ilya was the one who attacked him in the first place. Ilya wasn't having this at all and said that Carmelo was full of it and said, was there an attacker at all? So I guess one of them's the red herring and one of them's the real attacker. But if it's not Carmelo, this is going to feel like kind of a bummer that they went this far and it really was someone else. And this Melo Trick stuff is not leading to anything. There's no way that can be. So even though it's fun at the end of a mystery to get like a little gut punch, I feel like this mystery, if it was solved with anybody else but Carmelo, this would be a bummer. So I don't know, guys, tell me if you believe otherwise, but I'm Trick James, bitch. Bruce, who are you? And what did you think?
I am not Trick James, bitch. I am Bruce Lee Haywood. You can find me at B_Lee253 and my report for tonight's show about the Torch and on the VIP side. When it comes to Trick, when it comes to Melo, Ilya, this whole thing. So in the beginning of the show when they showed, that's redundant, in the beginning of the show, or not the beginning, but when during the show when Hayes was in the back and he held his knee as if he was attacked, I noted in my report that both he and Williams are wearing red, so which one is the red herring here? So I guess it came back here in the main event segment because in my report I basically wrote that if you're Hayes, you definitely laid out what from an outside perspective could be the justifiable accusation towards Ilya Dragunov because he brought up what happened at the Bash with the title being held up as he went for Torpedo Moscow on the outside, what happened at Halloween Havoc with Melo getting involved and distracting Hayes and all these things, and how Ilya Dragunov's plan to have them kind of get in the way of each other. Okay, sure, but you do still have to kind of squint your eyes a bit just to try and make that all work out. But from Melo's perspective, and you know, from a heel perspective, or for someone who did the attack, it makes sense in how you point the blame at him. Dragunov, for his part, was adamant that he was not the attacker. He looked Trick in the eyes and said, basically, I'm looking in the eye right now and I'm telling you, I did not attack you. And if it does end up being Dragunov, I guess they're trying to set it up in a way where, because of how admirable he seems to have been, that the turn seems more surprising, or the attack on the turn seems more surprising or more vicious because of that. But as you said, if it's not Melo, then this whole thing seems like it was kind of a waste of time. Well, not a waste of time, but the story would have an insufficient ending, in my opinion, because it's felt like all this time and all these little different parts of the story being built up for an eventual Trick and Hayes match. And if we don't get that, then it seems like they were doing a choose your own adventure book and went with the path that wasn't even in the book yet. So I'm just a bit hesitant to see where they go, but I do feel like with how Hayes was acting in the ring, how quickly he was getting incensed, how his eyes were darting back and forth. I feel like it's supposed to be obvious that he's trying to set this up as with Dragunov being the fall guy, even though he was the one that did do the attack.
I was a big fan of Choose Your Own Adventure. I still am. The best one, by the way, the best two, The Race Forever and The Dragon's Den. But I have some of the recent parody ones. There's one called Who Killed JFK, and there are no good endings. Not a single one. You can't figure it out, and you usually die. So it's pretty funny. So the Trick Mello story today, and this was during the first segment today, it occurred to me, I think somebody watched A Star Is Born and said, we can do this in wrestling. I think that might be what this is, where Mello, you know, he's a young guy himself, but he's the one whose star is fading because he's getting farther and farther away from that championship. And Trick is Lady Gaga. I wouldn't have gone with her, but it was the most recent one, and everybody remembers that one the most. I think
it makes you feel any better. I haven't seen either.
There are four, and
I have seen
three of them.
Me either. I was just going to say, Kelly, this isn't your other show 8 years back. We don't talk movies here.
We don't have the attention span for long enough to watch a movie.
Yeah.
But we can watch a two-hour wrestling show.
Right. I've seen three of the four versions. The one I haven't seen is the one that is relatively mocked, the Kris Kristofferson and Barbra Streisand one. I've seen all the others. So there you go. I was going to say, except blank doesn't happen at the end of a Trick and Mello story, but now I maybe can't say it because you guys should watch at least one of those.
I've never gotten to watch the movie.
Yeah, just go ahead.
But Carmelo Hayes will not kill himself at the end of...
That's very true.
Yep, of this story.
Probably not. It is a PG show.
Yeah, they're going to be like, hey, Mello, thanks for everything you've done for the business. This is going to be your biggest challenge.
Granted,
hey,
if they... If they did want to go, you know, with some sort of a storyline in that way, all he'd have to do is just hang out in the parking lot of the performance center for all of 10 minutes. He'll get jumped, wind up in the hospital at the very least. So could go that
route tonight, though.
That's true.
All right. So we had that. Let's go to the pseudo main event. The main event was Trick and Mello. Do you want to talk too?
I mean, kind of. Rather than just inserting witty banter that's somewhat mediocre in here every once in a while.
You inserted so much, I forgot that you had not talked about the segment. Go ahead.
Quite all right. I'm Nate Lindberg, and you know, if you didn't hear me last night with Wade on Wade's post show, check it out. We talked quite a bit about Raw. Had a few different callers come in. It was a pretty good conversation. I had a good time. But talking about all of this stuff, this is interesting. I like, because I never really would have thought of Ilya. Now, before this tonight, did you, either one of you guys even have any sort of inkling it could have potentially been Ilya?
No, because it's Carmelo Robust.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, like, you know, coming into this tonight, I had no thought in my mind whatsoever it's Ilya. It all just, like, you know, like both of you guys said, it all really seems like it's something that, yeah, like Carmelo Hayes is guilty, and he's just going, well, hey, you know, well, maybe it's Ilya. And, you know, I put it all together, man. I pieced everything together in my head, man. And, like, even when he's talking, I'm just sitting there going, how does it make sense? Like, the things that he's even saying and trying to piece together to, like, say why he thinks it's Ilya, even though he didn't give everything, it just, I don't know, it didn't even really make sense to me. It's really coming across like, you know, they're continuing that story. Plus, I can't really – unless they were going to go a completely different direction with Ilya Dragunov, Ilya, as I think it was I think it was Bruce that said this. You know, he's a very, you know, noble, admirable type character. He stands by his word, his, you know, and you know, that's kind of his thing as a man, if you will. And as champion, I feel like that is his character. So if all of a sudden he's attacking people in the back, he's lying about it, that's a complete change for this character. And I don't see them going that direction with Ilya right now. It would be a very drastic and stark change. So they certainly could, but if right now everything to me still points to where we're still getting that Trick and Mello match.
Yeah, they got something really, really great going with Ilya as the passionate babyface who will not die.
Yeah.
It just would be a shame to throw that away. Speaking of throw it away, last match on the show had Nikita Lyons on it. Like, Lyra Valkyria and Nikita Lyons versus Blair Davenport and Cora Jade is your tag team final. Early on, this got set up. We had Cora Jade in the scene, Lyra Valkyria, Blair Davenport shows up, and then Nikita Lyons shows up. She said like one thing, and it was a whole lot of no good. I don't even remember what it was. I just remember it. It was tough. That was later in the scene with by the lockers where Lyra and Nikita were, and Nikita said, "What? If you thought that kick was nasty,
nasty." Oh my God. I had to actually go back and watch that a couple times because it was so bad.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Mystery Science Theater 3000 exists because of performers like Nikita.
Oh yes. Can we do that?
We could.
That? We need to create that content. Anyway. That's another conversation.
These companies might resist. I feel like we wouldn't last very long.
Oh, we wouldn't be able to monetize it, but we might be able to get somewhere on YouTube.
Right. Okay, so long story short, Cora Jade pins Lyra Valkyria at 8:28 in your main-ish event. There were only 37 minutes of wrestling on this one, which is light for NXT, but when it happens, it's usually right out of a PLE when they're just starting to get stories ready. And Tatum Paxley, she was probably involved, but like I said, my eyes were looking at the screen, but some of it didn't totally sink in, Nate.
It's just like the question you threw to me, because I figured you're going to go to Bruce.
Nope, because I did that the first time, but Bruce, looks like you're up, pal.
Am I up? Whip. Okay, look.
Whipping.
So.
We are so on point tonight. We apologize, guys. My God.
So this match. Well, let's just go back to how it was all set up. Yeah, I wrote in my report, luckily Blair Davenport punched her in the mouth before she could say anymore. Right? So there's that. In the back in the locker room, I should say, with Valkyria and Lyons. As soon as she said that, I literally stopped typing and looked up at the screen and just kind of cocked my head. Like, I'm not a trained actor, but even I know that's bad, right? So I've never taken acting. Well, I took one drama class in college. It was only one semester, and I skipped half the classes. That aside, so I'm not really any, you know. It was just, yeah. And then you get to the ring. And for someone who's supposedly trained in martial arts, she reminds me of Carmen Petrovic's first couple of matches where she has the training, but she seems hesitant to put it into play. And Nikita Lyons has been going for how long now? And it still seems like she has to put any force into her kicks, especially. They just look very weak.
Her punches too, man.
The punches during her entrance or her punches during her match or both?
all around, yeah. So
for Valkyria to have come off the thing with Lynch, Xia Li, and having something set up with Davenport, and then to be associated here with Lyons, I understand it makes sense because Davenport eventually, you know, was the one who took out Lyons in the storyline in the first place, and so eventually Sudan want that retribution. But what also irked me more, even more so than the performance, was that they protected her and had Cora Jade pin Lyra Valkyria. Now, I even wrote in my report, yeah, I get it. I understand. She needs some sort of official reason to be added to the title picture instead of just attacking Valkyria from behind as she did at Deathmind. I just didn't know if it had to be so definitive. And it also made Jade look a bit weak because if I remember the ending sequence correctly, Davenport kicked off Valkyria, and then Valkyria and Jade butted heads off of that. Jade acted like she was knocked out on the mat. Davenport hit the Kamigoye, and then Nikita Lyons dragged her outside. Suddenly, Jade recovered and put in a pretty big pin on Valkyria to get the clean win. I feel like you would have been better off having Jade get a roll up victory than having that instead. But yeah, that aside, I feel like at New Year's Evil, at the least, we're going to get a triple threat match. And at worst, we're going to get a four-way match with Lyons being added to the match because of her involvement with Davenport and now all three of the other women involved. So that's where I think it's heading. And not sure if I'm very excited about that direction.
Nate, we go to you specifically about the women's tag team match that Bruce and I just talked about.
Oh, why, thank you, Kelly Wells. I appreciate this. I actually pretty much at 100% agreement with Bruce on kind of the direction and everything. And it, I don't know, I want to be able to get behind any wrestler that they put on my TV screen in some way, shape, or form, right? So, even somebody like, oh God, the first person I can think of is the great Khali. He couldn't wrestle, but eventually they found a comedic spot for him, right? And even when he couldn't wrestle, like, there was something there that, like, I still didn't like him, but he was still larger than life, and there was something about him where I'm like, okay, he doesn't really belong here, but I can kind of, I guess, understand. I don't get it with Nikita Lyons.
I get it. But...
Well, I mean, I get it.
Yeah, it's not for me, but
aesthetic,
I get it.
Uh-huh, aesthetically, exactly. Aesthetically, I get it. Okay, I understand that. But man, I really feel like they're setting her up for failure. And maybe all three of us are completely wrong. Maybe what she's doing is what the mainstream wants. I don't know. But, you listen to her backstage in really anytime she talks, and she's like, as Bruce was saying, I was thinking about this was as Bruce was talking, you're not a trained actor. I'm not a trained actor, but I do voiceover work for a living now. Like, that's part of my job. And it's not, if you practice and you work at it, it's not that hard to make yourself sound, rather convincing. I mean, I know even myself, I stumble and bumble all the time and this, that, the other thing. But, back when I actually had my own podcast, I still have my YouTube channel. We had a podcast on that. I had Kelly on the show and he even heard my produced stuff and was like, whoa, I don't know what to make of this. You're normally not this professional. So like, If I can do it, Nikita Lyons, you can do it. And that's kind of where I'm getting with this. It's it's the acting, but it's also then the way she kind of moves in the ring. I understand she's going for a shoot fighter and things like that, but she's throwing Shane McMahon style punches. Now they're not as wild as Shane McMahon's. She's obviously got some form and things like that. And every once in a while, like I see some of her stuff come up on like YouTube shorts. Still won't get into TikTok, but YouTube shorts sucked me in. So the algorithm will show me wrestling stuff. Her stuff comes up every once in a while. And like, she definitely has some, martial arts background and things. I don't want to knock her for that. And she seems to, know a heck of a lot more than I do, but when she's throwing her punches, they just don't look like they're really connecting or making any sort of, I don't know. It doesn't look like they hurt. And the same thing with her kicks. I don't know if she's pulling them. I don't know. It's not my wheelhouse, but All I know is when I watch her fight, when I watch her wrestle, I am not sucked in the way that I'm sucked into a larger female athlete, such as, I don't want to say like, you know, I'm sucked into a Nia Jax match, but I'm, you know, I believe Nia Jax is more of a competitor, I guess, you know, or Nyla Rose or something like that. You know what I mean? It, yeah, I'm not going to keep harping on it. I can't get behind her, and I really feel like they're doing her a disservice here, because if we're correct and we're not wrong, she's going to get to the main roster and she's basically going to get laughed out of the place. But I don't think that's the case with, again, we talked about her aesthetics and look and things. So I don't know. We just might unfortunately have to grit our teeth and bear it.
I honestly wouldn't be surprised if she's one of the ones who does better on Raw or SmackDown, because her type of an act is probably more apt for something like that.
You're probably right. You're probably, yeah. I would give you that.
And I think if there's one person she should try to look at to emulate for in-ring, or at least try and train with a bit, someone like Piper Niven. And I think that would be a good comp for her to try and emulate in the ring, because it's, I know what she's trying to do, but I'm not sure if it fits right now. It might be best to just go for more of a power-based game instead of a striker-based game.
I think that's a great call, Piper Niven, yeah.
Honor acting. Folks, I am a trained actor. I still act regularly. It's, you know, it's acting with a bit of a quotations, air quotes, with voiceovers and with industrials. And I promise you that she is as bad as we are saying. It's no good. I've been in one feature film. I only bring this up because a couple of days ago at the collectible shop where I work, I looked up at our small selection of DVDs, and like front and center was the DVD box of the movie I was in. And for a second, I was just like, I was in that movie. When did we get? And then I realized one of the guys I work with had bought my movie just to do that. So folks, if you ever get a chance to see The Forbidden Fruit, the movie I was in, don't. It's real bad. It's really, really bad. But if you ever get a chance to talk to me about stories from behind the scenes, definitely do, because it's a miracle that any movie gets made. It's a miracle that a bad movie gets made, and you should pat somebody on the back for finishing a movie, because for it to even get to the point where somebody has paid you to make it is unbelievable. Having done it, I can tell you that for sure. And I've been in a lot of other movies, but uncredited as a featured extra, one or two lines or less. Anyway, what else was on this show? Wraparound match, Dragon Lee versus Tyler Bate. I thought Tyler Bate was going to turn, because he just goes out there and he gets beat, and then he shakes hands with the babyface who beat him. This company needs heels in a big way. I don't think Tyler Bate is made to be a heel, but I also don't think he's made to be a babyface who loses all the time. 10 minutes and 53 seconds, Dragon Lee beats Tyler Bate. We are doing the open challenge with Dragon Lee. I feel like it's been maybe too recent since we saw an open challenge, but I don't dislike them. We also, later in the show, got Dragon Lee backstage with Drew Gulak, Charlie Dempsey, Miles Bourne, and Damon Kemp. And those four said they were challenging Dragon Lee to a match next week. Lee wanted to know who he was going to face, and Gulak said, oh, I bet you do. We'll tell you next week. So one of them will face him next week. It'll be Charlie Dempsey, I think. But at any rate, it will be one of the four of them. And none of them are injured, so I guess it could be any one of them. So on Dragon Lee, the surprising champion, North American champion, and where he's headed from here, Nate.
It is a bit of a surprise. We really didn't, I don't know, we didn't really put a lot of stock into that, as we talked about on our VIP after show. But, hey, here we are, Dragon League, NXT North American Champion. It is kind of nice to, in a way, move on from Dominic. I really enjoy having Dominic on the show and having him around and stuff. But, I don't know. I think it kind of was time to move on. I just, in a way, also wish they moved on to an actual NXT performer, up-and-comer, or Trick Williams, something like that, rather than a main roster star. But, again, Dragon Lee, close enough to his call-up where I guess maybe it's okay. Obviously this is a great match. I also had similar thoughts about Tyler Bate here. Maybe we were going to see some sort of a turn or something, because I'm wondering how long we're going to see Dragon Lee as champion. Is it going to be a lengthier and somewhat lengthy reign like Dominic had? I'm going to tie his two reigns together, because I think he lost it for a total of 3 days, 4 days. Excuse me. Certainly lost it for a couple of days. I don't know if it's going to be a lengthy reign like Dominic's, or if, he's going to lose it in the next few weeks, or New Year's Evil or something like that, where, he is a main roster talent at this point. There was one other thing that you brought up. The heel turn, I at least touched on that, but it was the Drew Gulak. What were they calling themselves? The no quarter punch bunch? I don't know.
It wasn't one quarter catch crew or something like that.
I kind of like the one quarter punch bunch instead, but all right. One quarter catch crew. That actually makes a hell of a lot more sense.
No quarter catch crew.
No quarter catch crew. That makes a lot more sense considering wrestling. I also immediately went to Charlie Dempsey when, they were talking about, who he was going to be facing next week. I like this when heels kind of, especially when, cause like the no, I already forget, no quarter catch crew. Thank you. They're all about wrestling, and kind of getting better and honing their craft and things. So, they would just doing something a little dastardly to get an edge and advantage. I like that. I think it works for the heel, or for them as heels. It kind of makes sense, I think, for Charlie Dempsey. He's been the bit of a heavy kind of for them. They've sent him to the wolves a few times in other angles and things, and potentially leading to a match with Drew Gulak, maybe, depending on how this goes. Obviously, it could just be a one-off, but it depends on how it progresses, if it's going to be a longer-term feud with them, or again, if it is just a one-off.
Bruce?
I wrote that I want it to be Damon Kemp just because I want to see Damon Kemp wrestle again, but it'll probably be Dempsey. He was my first choice. I just wanted to put something out there for Damon Kemp, because I feel like it's been a long time since I've seen him wrestle a decent, right? Been in the ring just to wrestle a match, so it'd be nice to see him get back out there.
Have we seen him since the Underground thing?
I don't know. I don't think
so. I don't know if we have.
It's been a while.
We haven't seen his brother since then, anyway.
No.
But either one.
I would like it to be Kemp, because I like watching him wrestle, so that would be nice. But to the match,
I think we saw Kemp at least once.
I think there was a tag team match with one of these two he was in, but it was quick, short, I don't know. So the match itself, as you would expect with these two, was a good match. My only issue is that as much as we complained about it in the past, I kind of do wish they would just go back to having commercial breaks only during the entrances, and that we don't have any commercial breaks during matches except for when, there's a main event and it goes a half hour or something. Just because a match like this especially, I don't want to have half of it disappear on me because I'm not able to see it, right? And it feels like I'm missing so much of the story that's being told. But what was shown, what I was able to see, it was a good match. It was technically sound. These two you know, at the beginning, there were I think there was one hiccup in communication, but then from there, they meshed pretty well. When you talk about Tyler Bate here, you know, I've long said that Bate and Roxanne Perez are on the same trajectory. They come in for big futures, they lose, they go away for a bit, they come in, they lose, they go away for a bit. I thought that during his entrance, he was going to get attacked by somebody because of how long they stayed on him for, you know, at the entrance and as he was making his way up. And then, as you said, the reason I thought he was going to turn at the end is because they shook hands and then he retreated behind Dragon Lee as Dragon Lee posed in the ring with the title. And that's usually a sign of someone about to get attacked, right? So he might not be the best heel, but I feel like if anybody in NXT right now could use a change, it's Tyler Bate. And if that means becoming a heel, then try it. He's young, and right now in NXT, it's a place to try out to see if he can be a heel. What they did with Bron Breakker, it turns out he's much better as a heel than he is a face. I mean, it took too long to make that change, and I think right now they're taking too long to make that change with Tyler Bate, but it's something they can do, and I think they just missed a good opportunity to do that and make him be, as you said, they're low on heels, and they're low on credible heels, right? So they need someone that, if he does turn heel, I guess the thing is they need to make sure he wins matches. Because while Dijak came out on top tonight, we'll get to that, he technically lost his match too. So it's just one of those things where I feel like I don't expect Tyler Bate to win any of his matches that he's in anymore. And that's not something that I think they want. And I don't think it's something that any of us want to think about any wrestler going into any match.
The breakout tournament is happening now. And if you're not booked in it, what you need to do is hit somebody who is in it with a chair. This should be enough to remove somebody who doesn't even wrestle this week because the other two matches were this week. And that apparently will be a long-term injury for Trey Bearhill.
The rookies, they don't have quite as many hit points. It's kind of like referees.
That's true. Yeah. Our young boys, young lions in New Japan Pro Wrestling. Great big dudes taken down by, you know, your standard forearm. It's what has to happen to them. Obafemi, he sure is big and cool. He's really cool, guys. I'm going to probably go blue in the face talking about how cool Obafemi is over the next rest of his career. But
yes.
Hopefully you won't get sick of it because I'm going to talk about it. At first, it struck me as odd that Miles Bourne would lose in the first round, but Miles Bourne is already figured into the company. Yeah. Like, he's doing stuff already. Nobody needs this. Well, I won't say nobody needs it less than him. It's not like he's his cup runneth over with credibility, but he is figured in. Obafemi over Miles Bourne in 3:35. The other one, Riley Osborne, Bourne and Osborne. They thought we wouldn't notice. As if
the same thing.
Riley Osborne defeats Keanu Carver at 3:28. Keanu Carver is a great big dude. He's pretty green, but he showed some stuff, and he's a strong dude. Riley Osborne, they're doing something with him in having him be Chase U, and we'll see where that heads, because Thea Hale's a bit sweet on him. This could have been you, Bodhi, if you had not you flamed out of the company. Bodie Hayward. Yeah, Bodie Hayward. Everybody
kudos,
remember who I was talking
kudos,
about?
I do. Kudos for actually remembering, because I wouldn't have thought about it.
I started saying the sentence before I remembered, and I was like, surely I'll remember his name. And then there was like a full second or two of terror when I realized I didn't have it yet. But your quarterfinals, moving on to the semifinals, are Obafemi and Riley Osborne, both presented as the baby face in their match, more or less. So, I thought these were pretty reasonably decent first outings, Bruce.
Yeah, what I wrote about tonight is it tonight's the best wrestling the best in-ring wrestling action of the week? No, but it wasn't supposed to be. That's kind of the purpose of the breakout tournament, right, is to get them some experience, get people to understand who these people are going to be moving forward, because you're probably going to see them. And I'll touch on Osborne and Carver first, because this is the one you most recently touched on. With Osborne, it's quite obvious that he has good training, he has skills, he just has more experience and more of the skills right now than Keanu Carver does. As they said, it's his in-ring debut tonight, if we're to believe Vic Joseph, and Carver began in February. So if we're to believe Joseph with everything he said, then that's, what, a nine-month turnaround for him to start training and then have his in-ring debut on national television? In that case, I mean, you could definitely tell he was green, but he also, as you said, a lot of great promise. One of the best pounces I've seen in a while tonight hit on Osborne. And that leads me back to another thing about Osborne is, if anything, he is going to have a great career in this company as enhancement talent because of how he can bump for people. That lariat that Carver hit tonight, it thudded throughout the arena, was very loud, and you could see on Carver, on Osborne, big red welt on the left side of his chest from where that lariat hit. So just for both of them, you could see why they're signing and why they're in this tournament. However, we can get to the rest of the tournament later in terms of the bracket. But then when we go to the other match, Obafemi against Miles Bourne, yeah, as you said, Miles Bourne, he's been figured into TV on NXT for a while. He's in a heel stable. He's been in that heel stable for a while. He's had some backstory on him already about being the first deaf wrestler in WWE and NXT. So he's the one person in this tournament who doesn't necessarily need to be in the tournament, right? You said he doesn't need to win a tournament, but I don't even think he needs to really be in the tournament. But I think his purpose here was to give more credibility to Obafemi in his advancement because of the association that Bourne has with the other three. And then just a reminder to people, because I like putting over myself, of course. When the tournament was announced, but we had no participants yet confirmed, I said, just because I don't really know who else, but also because I want to see him back on TV, I'm going to pick Obafemi to win the tournament. Even with the inclusion of Lexus King here, I'm going to stick with Obafemi because I'm going to be a bit like Kelly and just really want to keep seeing Obafemi every week because there's a lot of charisma, a lot of uniqueness there. He has a lot of strength, good power offense thus far, but he's also showed a good amount of agility in the ring. And I feel like if they're patient with him and they just continue what they're doing, that he can be one of their big, their big body, either heel gatekeepers on the main roster, not NXT, but on Raw, SmackDown, one of the kind of big body heel gatekeepers and sometimes challenging for the main titles. And even if they can really channel into it, then I have no doubt that he can become one of their top, five or six acts on the show, depending on what show he's on. He just has a lot of qualities that I look for when you're looking at developmental wrestlers and you try and project out. I think he has a lot of those qualities that you can kind of circle and, like with minor leaguers going to the major leagues, right? Like, these are the strengths that we're going to make sure we highlight those, and there's enough of those that even with the weaknesses, we can work on those just to make them passable enough that they become a full package product. And I think Femi's well on his way, and I'm still going to stick with him as my choice to win the tournament.
Nate?
All right, I know I'm not hosting the show tonight, but I can't tell if there's an issue with the switchboard or if there is somebody that looks like they want to call. It says anonymous next
there's
to...
There's not. Every few weeks we get a double anonymous, and
okay.
And it happens at exactly the same time. They end up dropping at exactly the same time.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Never mind then. I was going to say I'll talk and then we'll try it, but never mind then if it's a glitch. If it's not a glitch, hit one and then hit one again because it'll unflag you and then flag you, and then that way we know you're real. But anyway, yeah, Obafemi's the man. Like, first off, Bruce absolutely did call it before they even announced the bracket. He did say that, Obafemi. So I'll give credit where credit is due. But yeah, I really like him. He definitely has the charisma. I mean, he's probably got a little bit more work to do in the ring, but I like what I saw. The kind of powerhouse, but he's definitely super agile as well. Even down to, and obviously, you know, I'm assuming he's not putting on the accent like Kofi Kingston did back in the day, but even down to the accent, I really like it for that character. It kind of suits the character. So, well done kind of incorporating, real life aspects like that into the character too. I think it's just a really, really good package, I guess is kind of what I'm trying to say. And Riley Osborne as well. I was really impressed with what we saw out of him tonight. His athletics, just kind of, running to the ring, doing the backflip during his entrance. He just seemed very confident of himself when he made his entrance. Obviously he got, he won, but I mean, he had a few moments where, in the match, he was getting kind of, his ass kicked, but I really like what we saw there. I'm hoping we're going to see a little bit more out of him with everything going on with Thea Hale. Now, as we discussed, I'm staring at the bracket here right now, but Riley Osborne, Obafemi, they're on opposite sides of the bracket. And next week we, and obviously Riley Osborne, Obafemi are faces. Next week we have Lexus King versus I think it's pronounced Dion Lennox or Dion Lennox. Dion Lennox. I worked the guy Matt Dion, and it's all right, but Dion.
Dion.
Thank you. It's been a long day. Dion Lennox. I'm gonna stop thinking about it. Tavon Heights, Luca Stivino. So I'm assuming it's going to be King and Chris Stivino coming out next week on top, since they're both heels. And then we'll move into the finals after that. Or semifinals and finals. So far I like what I see, and we'll see who actually breaks out.
All right. Why don't I go to emails, and if our last couple matches aren't covered by those emails, because there are three, then we'll cover them. So, hey team, it's JB from Detroit. Number one, does Lexus King really need to be in the breakout tournament? He got a very strong introduction to NXT, and he's already had a very high profile and PLE match with Carmelo Hayes. I feel as though the way to establish King is with feuds such as the one he had with Hayes, and that the breakout tourney spot would have likely been better maximized for the potential of someone else. No, I think it's fine that he's in it. It'll be kind of boring if he wins, but he also still does kind of need the boost, especially after he lost his first major feud. He's really no further along than all these other guys, and all these other guys are even greener than he is. So, yeah, I think it's just fine for him to be there, although it kind of stands out because he's had, like, all the fanfare on the show. Number two, speaking of the breakout tournament, has NXT been leaning too heavily into tournaments and multi-person/gimmick matches lately? In your opinion, I personally feel as though they have been. Oh, I think they've been leaning on multi-person and gimmick matches way too much since the beginning of Black and Gold. Number three, will Friday essentially amount to Carmelo Hayes' official main roster call-up permanently? No. Four, speaking of the main roster, will the change in plans for the North American title due to Wesley's injury affect Dragon Lee's overall main roster trajectory? Will this stunt him, boost him, or will everything play out as it would have had Lee not gotten hurt, as there is much more mixing of Raw, SmackDown, and NXT compared to even 1 year ago? This probably changes plans for him a little bit, but if anything, I think that this could help him. It gives him a chance to run with a championship, any championship, and then they can see kind of what that does for him. Number five, what is a new gimmick match that you could see NXT debut in the next few years, similar to how they debuted the Iron Survivor Challenge last year? Now that we have 2 years of evidence, the match seems to be a success to me. Oh, I absolutely think so. As always, love the show and go VIP. Let me throw to Bruce if you have thoughts of on any or all, and if there's you know, if there's nothing there, leave it alone.
I have down four of the five questions, so I missed one. But first, I'll just touch on the ones I didn't get, and then you can remind me of the last one. Alexis King, I wrote that, honestly, he probably should have debuted with this tournament, but then that would have probably made it obvious that he was going to win the tournament. So I think with his up-and-down tenure thus far, it makes it less likely that he's going to be the winner, but I do feel like he's going to be in the final still against Obafemi. So whether or not he needs to be in the tournament, probably at this point, probably not, but I still do think it's where he should have debuted. When it comes to tournaments and multi-man matches, I was wondering if they were asking about AEW at first, because that's really the big one of the big criticisms toward them is that there's always a tournament. There's always multi-person matches, multi-team matches. With NXT, this is something that we've been discussing years?
Since the dawn of time.
It's just like it kind of is AEW, but WWE does this a lot too. Triple threat matches, four ways, triple threat tag team matches, four way tag team matches, triple threat tag team ladder matches, the ones that Cully and I love and love and love to recap, right? It's just kind of what you should expect to see when it comes to watching WWE, AEW. Now, I'm not sure how other promotions do it really, but I know New Japan, it was news a couple of years ago when they had their first triple threat match, I think it was. Because usually it's just singles matches or tag team matches or six-man tag team matches, but nothing like a triple threat or a four-way kind of thing.
They've done a couple of four-ways and a couple of triple threats. The triple threats have been tags, and the four-ways have been singles matches for the junior heavyweight championship. And both of those were at Wrestle Kingdom. Also, throughout the year, surprisingly enough, they do Survivor Series matches. So right now, New Japan is doing more Survivor Series matches than WWE because they're not doing any.
Right, but the thing is, right, that they do far less, so you don't expect to see them as much as we do here. And it has more of an impact when they do them over in Japan because of how rarely you do see those matches. So you kind of have to get used to that if you're sick of them, I guess, here in watching NXT especially. But then, yeah, it's when I watch them, especially the more modern ones, if I go back to when we really started seeing these in the 90s, the late 90s, and how they kind of developed, and I want to think especially about the TNA ones. Like, to me, my favorite triple threat match is still Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, AJ Styles, Unbreakable 2005. My favorite triple threat tag team matches, as we discussed, Andrews
NXT
and Webster.
UK.
Yeah. Andrews Webster versus Gallus versus Grizzled Young Veterans. So, but if we think back, right, it wasn't that there was just ingenuity because they were newer. It's more so the fact that I didn't have to suspend my disbelief so much, especially when you have to get someone out of the match for a bit, right? Oh, we're just hit a series of finishers. There we go. Oh, we're just going to put them through a table. There we go. I feel like there was more coherence, more fluency to those matches, not having to always do those spots. And when these gimmick matches now, or not the gimmick matches, but the three ways, the four ways, you know, five, six ways, whatever, these days I feel like there's way too many moments where people are spending time on the outside for basically a time that leaves me in disbelief, right? And I think if they can fix those kind of habits that we see in the modern matches, then it'll make seeing all these, you know, multi-person matches, multi-team matches more palatable. When it comes to Melo, I don't think Friday will be an official call-up. It was, you know, at least they discussed it on the show tonight, and Williams brought it up when they're in the trainer's room. I just feel like it's another one of those situations where they can get some eyes on him, maybe give him a surprise victory, then have him lose in the next round. But he has that story with Williams to tell. And yes, in the past, they've screwed these stories over to have something happen on Raw and SmackDown, but that was not what Triple H and Shawn Michaels running things. I feel like they have a much, not just a better relationship, but a better understanding of who these characters are and what they're embroiled in to have something like this, one of the best long-term stories they've told in NXT in a long time, just to be thrown away for a quick tournament call-up. And then when it comes to gimmick matches, I noted on Saturday that the Iron Survivor Challenge is probably my favorite new gimmick match, new match concept that I've seen in a couple of years, or whatever the most recent one was. This is probably my favorite that I've seen. And, oh, the Fight Pit was also good too. And we've discussed how, like, with the Fight Pit, with this, we last year on the show, I remember discussing specifically how we thought this would eventually make its way to Raw or SmackDown. We thought it would happen sooner than this, I think, because it's been a whole year. It hasn't happened yet. And the Fight Pit pretty much made its way to Raw or SmackDown, I think, within a year, maybe a little over a year. But NXT, we see that they're not afraid to try something out and see if it works or not. We've seen that with characters. We've seen that with matches. We've seen that with teams, et cetera. So if I don't know what another new match concept will be, but I can see NXT definitely being the vanguard of pushing that forward. I just hope they don't do something like a King of the Mountain match. Let's put it that way.
Nate, on this email.
Okay, let's start at the top. Does Lexus King need to be in the breakout tournament? No, he doesn't, but he is. So there we are. I don't think he's going to win. If he does win, I wonder why they I don't know. I hope they tell a good story at that point, but I don't think he's going to win. Then have they been leaning too heavily into tournaments, multi-person gimmick matches lately? Tournaments, maybe a little bit, but NXT's always had some sort of a tournament, you know. Well, I wouldn't say always, but they for quite some time. Yeah, we've had Dusty Classic, the Mae Young Classic. Granted, Mae Young Classic, I guess, did kind of take a place on its own outside of NXT, but you know, but the Dusty Classic and a plethora of other tournaments, you know, we've seen breakout tournament and stuff. So I'm cool with them doing like yearly tournaments and things, especially if you know, and it might seem like, excuse me, oh, that came out of nowhere. And it might seem like they're a bit excessive because they're doing them for the men and the women. So it kind of, when a tournament comes around, it's, you know, we're kind of getting a double dose of them. But I'm cool with tournaments. In terms of multi-person gimmick, gimmick matches, yeah, totally in agreement with you guys. Not going to harp on it and repeat what you guys just said. Will Friday essentially mount to Carmelo Hayes' official main roster call it permanently? I don't know. We talked about this a little bit on the main on the VIP roundtable, and obviously these guys just talked about it too. Personally, I don't think it's going to be his official main roster call up because he's still got this feud going on, and you know, as these guys are saying, like, this is one of the better feuds that they've had in NXT in quite some time. So please don't screw it up. I don't think they will. I have faith in Triple H and HBK as a creative booking duo. And I don't think they're going to do each other like that, if you will, but please, you know, we'll see. You know, he could potentially do double duty and work NXT and the main roster, but I think he's probably better served finishing out the story, you know, whether that be at Vengeance Day or New Year's Evil, probably Vengeance Day, or most likely Stand and Deliver. You know, then once the feud's done, then go up to the main roster. Will the plans for the North American title, Wesley's injury affect Dragon Lee's main roster trajectory? I don't know. It might. I think this, I mean, him coming down, winning a title, even if it is, you know, NXT is developmental, you know, but Dominic Mysterio, he won it off of Dom, who is a main roster talent. He's a very popular main roster talent, even if he does get booed out of the building all the time. But, you know, everybody loves to hate Dom. So I think that's probably, you know, a good thing that he's got the title. He's assuming he pulls double duty and he shows up on the main roster as well with the title, then, you know, I think that's good for NXT. He keeps the title on the main roster. You know, they can talk about NXT on the main roster. So I think that's good. I think it's, I don't know. We'll see. Obviously, we'll never really know what the original plans for him were, but I'm sure it changes his trajectory somewhat, you know, butterfly effect and all that. But, for the good or for the worse, well, unfortunately, I don't have a flux capacitor, so I unfortunately don't know. And then a new gimmick match.
When I worked at Best Buy, when we got new employees, if we liked them, we would say, hey, could you go to the back and check if there's a flux capacitor for me? And invariably, they would. It was That's amazing. Awesome. They'd come back and be like, dude, you're the worst. I'm like, I am.
Also, real quickly.
Blinker fluid.
Real quickly, that North American title's been on Raw specifically for many months now, and I wonder how many of the people who just watch Raw or SmackDown associate that title with being on Raw and not on NXT. It's just a little thing I'm wondering because of how often it's been there. So if Dragon Lee is pulling double duty and he's on SmackDown now, I wonder if they think it's going to just be a Raw or SmackDown title, like a floating title between the two rather than an NXT title.
I'm sure probably a couple people at least will wonder what's going on, but yeah, good point. In terms of another gimmick match, I mean, I am not going to be able to come up with a creatively awesome idea for a gimmick match. I don't know what they're going to pull out next, but NXT, you know, as these guys are again just talking about, you know, the Fight Pit, Iron Survivor Challenge, they're great with coming up with some new match ideas, some unique match ideas. You know, even the Heritage Cup, even though it is kind of, you know, similar to the New Japan Rounds matches and things like that, for WWE, it's unique, it's different. There's part of me that doesn't want to see some of these get put on the main roster. And obviously if it's going to draw money with it. And, you know, I think that's obviously the direction the company is going to go, but it is kind of nice. Like War Games was an NXT thing, you know? And I don't know, for me, it was an NXT thing. I liked it being an NXT thing.
There's so many WCW fans are just going to email us.
Yeah, I know.
Well, full of rage. Like, I'm talking. No, I mean, War Games is a WCW thing, but in modern day wrestling, War Games was an NXT thing. In WWE, I mean, you didn't see War Games under a WWE banner. You saw War Games under an NXT banner. That is what I'm saying. War Games, yes. Dusty Rhodes creation, WCW, I am well aware. So I kind of like NXT having like their own thing to make it, you know, unique and kind of maybe hype up and be really cool, maybe draw some people in that wouldn't necessarily watch otherwise. Like the Royal Rumble, if I don't want to put words in Kelly's mouth, but I believe it's both me and Kelly's favorite time of the year. If NXT had something like a gimmick match that wasn't put up on the main roster that could potentially draw people in, why not? Iron Survivor Challenge, I kind of hope it's an NXT thing and we don't ever see it on the main roster. But, again, they're going to obviously do what's best for business, what draws money. So, if they think putting on the main roster is going to do that, then I'm sure we'll see it someday.
The Royal Rumble is indeed the most excited I will get all year. And then some years it'll be an old Brock who doesn't need it and a Ronda Rousey who does also not need it. And I will go to bed thinking, and there's a full freaking year again until the next Royal Rumble. And oh God.
Yep. I know what you mean.
Oh boy. Through to me after his half hour or so of talking, I'm just going to let people know he is the one who asked if we could have a shorter show this week.
I tried.
You know, it's funny. Like, I was up really late last night after the post show with Wade. I figured by this point in the night, I was going to be dead freaking tired, and I feel like I just drank a cup of coffee for some reason, which is...
You're on fumes, man. You're gonna get done. You're going to close your laptop and be like, oh, God. And then you're going to fall asleep in your chair.
Well, I don't know why I close my laptop because I'm on a desktop, but still, it's cool.
Just don't.
Just go. God damn it.
How is that...
because I need to just make you and drive you crazy. So
freaking working. Azan White comes to us with this email. Hello, NXT folks. Number one, what kind of deal do you think Scripps has planned for Chase U? And will it result in OTM and Tony D family gang wars? Number two, what are your thoughts on the Drew Gulak group being named the No Quarter Catch Crew? Nate's thoughts are he can't remember it. My thoughts are,
say what?
I didn't remember they had a name, but when these guys started talking about there being a name, I realized I had heard it. But the branding is not there. I think it's a really good name for them. I just have my doubts that this group, it has legs. If they decide it has legs, I'm still waiting for Shawn Michaels to decide that this group is worth putting in a bigger spot. Because right now it seems like some guys who don't get any time together, kind of like the Job Squad. Like, it extended their stay in the company.
I haven't thought about the Job Squad in so long.
Neither have I.
Wow.
Is there anything you like or dislike about them? I really like Charlie Dempsey's throwback style. I like what I've seen of Miles Bourne. I've always liked Drew Gulak. And Damon Kemp is also a wrestler. He is. He does the job. There's no denying that. Number three, I just don't. He's never grabbed me. Not one thing about him. Like, I want him to. He just hasn't. Number three, do you think HBK deserves to be voted Booker of the Year as the year ends? Has he been more consistent than both Triple H and Tony Khan? I don't care either, but I will say that the votes never go to anything but WWE or WWE's biggest rival. It's just that's the way the voters are. They are dichotomous. They're just like, I have to either stand this company or I have to fight this company. That is what the votes usually go to. I think that if this was just chosen by a panel of experts, NXT would have to be considered. It would have to depend on how long the memory of the voters are, because Sean, I feel, had some growing pains for a while. This show was not popping at all. Doing this show was easy because when stuff's not good, there's a lot to talk about. But doing the recap was a trudge and things like that. And it's less so now because it's just more consistent, more cogent, more coherent. I think that he warrants some mention, but I think that it will be won by Triple H probably again. But I don't know. I'm with Bruce. It doesn't matter to me. But yeah, I think if in any year it was possible for the NXT Booker to win, it's this year. Anything on this email, Nate?
So what does Scripps have planned for Chase U? I mean, it looks like it's some sort of a loan shark type deal. That's kind of like what I'm leaning towards, which is going to potentially just get him back in the same position he was in. So it could be like, you know, that type of a cycle where they're going to play off of that and maybe try to do something like that. I don't know. That was the first thing that came to my mind when he put the briefcase down in front of Chase at the on the podium there. So that's kind of my thought there. And, you know, with it resulting in like an OTM and Tony D family gang war, I really didn't think about that until reading it here in this email. But I mean, I feel like that's kind of like tailor-made, you know, for them. So why not? The Drew Gulak group being the no quarter catch crew, it's kind of like Timothy Thatcher and saying catch is catch can when I for some reason kept saying thatch is thatch can, and Kelly and Tom would ridicule me. I have a feeling it's probably going to do the same thing and I'm going to trip up over it. So I don't like it, even though I really do like it because I think it certainly works for them. What do I like or dislike about them? I mean, mostly the same things that Kelly and Bruce talked about. With Damon Kemp, though, unlike Kelly, like his look grabs me. Like I feel like he could be almost kind of like a WWE Taz, not, you know, ECW Taz, you know, but something like that, like, and kind of have a bit more of a mean streak or something to him. But obviously there's something that's either not connecting with the crowd or he's not connecting.
He has no charisma.
Yeah, it's well, yeah, there's definitely that. He has no charisma. Neither does his brother. So it runs in the family, I guess.
Yeah. Wrestling families are sometimes that. There was a family of really, really nice guys in my hometown, and my hometown is known around the state for being the best small wrestling town there is. We'd have like 4 state champions a year. And there's a dad and 2 kids. The dad's the coach, the 2 kids, both 3-time champions, just really, really nice guys. And you could not possibly have an interesting conversation with any one of the 3 of them. Just never. Go ahead.
No, fair. You know, that makes sense. So yeah, there's that HBK Booker of the Year. I mean, in my opinion, there's only one person to nominate for Booker of the Year, and that's Booker T. I had to make the joke because I've been on a roll with him tonight. Yeah, I mean, I feel like it should go if anybody. I mean, granted, I'm not really watching other brands and things other than WWE and NXT. So, I mean, I really can't speak to that, but at least between main roster and NXT, I'd still give it to Triple H. I really like what they're doing in NXT. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, the Bloodline story, Sami Zayn, there's so many good things that have been going on the main roster where 5 hours of TV does not necessarily feel like a slog anymore. Granted, I don't watch 5 hours of TV a week. I don't have time for that. But, you know, if I can, I will. But still, like, the show itself, when I'm catching up on highlights or even the DVR, you know, fast-forwarding through commercials, it doesn't feel like it's a super slog. There's a lot of really cool things going on. I feel like HBK, if, you know, honorable mention, like, you know, runner-up type of deal. If he did win, Booker of the Year, I wouldn't complain. But for me, between the two, I think it'd go to Triple H.
Insofar as Nate saying that Booker T needs to be the Booker of the Year, I'll just say that I'm constantly messaging Skype asking if there's a way to mute just one of the guys on my podcast. Bruce, go ahead.
Nate's joke was so terrible, I forgot the first part of the email before the whole no quarter catch crew thing.
Breakout tournament, feminism. Oh, wait, I'm reading Kevin Catani's. That's next. Scripps, Chase U, OT.
Oh, see, totally threw me off because I had a great response ready for that. So, I'm watching this. I'm thinking, street money, university, college-ish, right? Is Scripps trying to pull a Stringer Bell? So that's kind of what went through my head when I saw this. And then, we all know how that ended for Stringer Bell, though. So yeah.
Not all of us. I have no idea what you're talking about.
You didn't know the ending of A Star is Born or The Wire. This is...
At least I got one of the 2. Stringer got by Brother Muzone and Omar Little in one of the best scenes of that season. So, hopefully Scripps doesn't go off.
Stringer Bell being Idris Elba. That's what really blew him up. In the States, my friend.
Yeah, in the States. Because I didn't know he was British.
Come on.
This was... The Wire was before The Office. I'll tell you that.
I'm just arguing to argue at this point.
I didn't even know he was British at first when I was watching The Wire. So
I didn't either.
There's that. He was really good at Stringer Bell. But yeah, he went out how you would expect, and I don't think they're gonna, like you said earlier, no suicide, probably no murder on the show. But we have seen, we have seen murder on the show. Never mind.
Yeah,
I need to rethink this. Maybe they are pulling the Stringer Bell with scripts. Exactly. Maybe they are pulling this. Okay. And maybe his brother Muzon and Omar Little are going to be Tony D'Angelo and Stax. Okay, that makes sense. Since they've already got the bodies anyway. You know what? I'm rethinking this. They're definitely pulling a Stringer Bell with this one here. All right. When it comes to Cash Point 4.5, I'm fine with whatever they want to call themselves. I like Damon Kemp's in-ring. It's just, yeah, he doesn't have very much charisma, and they've tried. I think about that match with the Creeds. Was it the Hearst match, was it, that they had with Pretty Deadly, and how he was involved and everything, and everything he did with the Creeds, I thought, with Diamond Mine, was pretty good. It's just, again, I just want to see him in the ring again, because in the ring, I do like what I see, but again, just no charisma. And then, I forgot the last part of the email because of all that, but whatever.
Do you think HBK deserves to be Booker of the Year?
And look, we've been talking, we talked last week either with, I think it was Brad, about how NXT probably has been the best wrestling show of the main ones in North America over the last couple months. But it's only been a couple months, right? As Kelly was saying, there's been growing pains. And this whole Booker of the Year talk, Booker, all that, who, honestly, especially the Bookers themselves, shouldn't care. But I don't see why fans get so caught up in it and they just want to have something to argue about. It really has no bearing who gets the award on how I consume and enjoy my wrestling. So if you want this kayfabe award and you think it should go to someone and you want to argue about that, more power to you. But I have no time or energy to spend on frivolous stuff like that.
Yeah, it's a lot like when people get mad that a certain band didn't win a Grammy. And I'm like, did you listen to the ones who did? And they're like, well, no. I'm like, okay, so a couple of things then, and you can extrapolate the rest. Kevin Catani comes at this one with us with this one. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you all well. I thought tonight was a good episode of NXT. I love the beginning of the breakout tournament. And as is usually the case, I always lament not getting to know the losers more before tournament begins, because the whole thing just kind of starts and then we won't see them again until after the new year. That said, Femi is a monster, and Osborne should be a healthy addition to the lightweight side of the roster. I'm worried for the guy that Osborne beat, as he and Femi have a very similar look. I suppose time will tell. With half of round one done and Lexus King now in the tournament, who are your favorites to win? Is King the obvious choice? Yes. Lastly, I have a soft spot for Hank and Tank, but I feel like they're treading water. Well, he said treading, but he meant treading, I think. Is this Gallus match a put-up-or-shut-up moment for them? I just feel like there is a lot of good talent getting regular airtime, and they haven't really done anything to set themselves apart. What do you all think? Yeah, Hank and Tank are kind of in a purgatory for me. It seems like they're over with the boys, and they're over with the live crowd, but they're just not figured in in a big way. I considered the same thing with Obafemi
the other guy,
Keanu Carter. Carver. I feel like do him any favors to be like, he comes in a monster power dude, and that's everything he's got to hang his hat on, and then he's not even the only one of the week. Like, they just could have made his match, even if you're jobbing him in the first round, and that's fine because he's got a long way to go. Yeah, let him be special that week, because you don't need to use Obafemi next week. Not that there's not meat in this tournament, but I feel like you could have spaced out those guys and made his power look more impressive next week when there wasn't somebody else who did it just that little bit much better an hour earlier. That's how I kind of feel. Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are officially over. The professor, Kevin B. Catani, PhD. P.S. Thanks for the shout out on Wade's show, Nate. being a guest on his show is on my bucket list. All right. Why don't I throw to, I think Bruce is first this time. Who knows? Go ahead, Bruce.
Well, I'm going to stick with Femi, like I said earlier. And when it comes to differentiating the two because of their similar styles, when I saw Femi tonight, and this wasn't the case when I saw him the first time when they did the kind of triple debut of him, I forget who the other person was, and then is her name Danny Palmer, I think. It was a three people they kind of did the triple debut with. I didn't get those vibes from him then, but tonight when Femi was in the ring, his demeanor, his posturing, how he moved especially, gave me really big Rusev vibes, Miro vibes, right?
Ooh.
So
yeah, now that you
I wanted to see him wrestle in bare feet because of the vibes I got from him just reminding me of Rusev. And I know eventually Rusev went to boots because he went over the top rope and broke his foot on the landing. But I think that's one way you can help differentiate. We just saw this with Riddle, but he's gone, right? So it's not as if there's someone there that has this as part of their gimmick anymore. I feel like because of how he presented himself and how it evoked the image for me, but just also his size, his presence, I feel like that could be something that he could use to not only give himself another part that makes him memorable, but so that people don't get him confused with Keanu Carver, because they do have similar styles, even though they do look a bit different. Carver is a bit smaller in terms of height than Femi, but I think that's a good way to go for them, and especially for Femi, just because, again, for some reason while I was watching him tonight, I really got those Rusev vibes off of him, and I think he could be a bigger, more athletic version of more powerful version of Rusev that we saw, not just in NXT, but in WWE.
And don't forget that he would be a cool version, because I don't know if I've mentioned it, but Ova Femi is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I just want that to be out there that I've mentioned.
What do you
that.
Think about the comparison, though? Did you get those?
I do. Here's the only thing. When Rusev showed up, I hated him. I don't have like a great reason for this. I think, like, I understood that
it was a bit rough at first.
Yeah, I understood that it was a developmental show, but I resented how green some of them were, even though, like, I had no reason to, because those are the growing pains. That's kind of what the show is meant to show you in some cases. And I've said before, if it's an A to Z thing, then maybe don't show us A to F, because that stuff is ugly. But by all means, then bring me in on F and take me to the rest of the way to the finished product. Nate, on the professor's email.
All right. So, Kevin, no problem. Thank you for you said thank you for the shout-out on the poster last night, but thank you for filling in on Wrestling in America for me. That was awesome. I don't have a whole lot to add that we haven't already talked about or you guys didn't just talk about. So, I guess I'm just going to – I'll just throw it back to you guys. I mean, the Hank and Tank stuff, we didn't really talk – you guys didn't really talk about a whole lot. But, they are kind of treading water. I think this probably is going to be a bit of a moment for them, but time will tell and see how much of one, but that's about what I got with the email.
The only things we didn't talk about are the opening match, Briggs, Jensen, and Henley versus Metaphor. The faces win this one in 11:02. We thought maybe this could have been where the baby faces keep on breaking up because one of them is distracted, and you could do it with any of them. You really could. At this point, they still kind of did where Henley fought to the back with Tiffany Stratton. And so that could be a little point of contention, but Josh Briggs continues to spread his wings. He pins Noam Dar to become the next challenger for the Heritage Cup. So there at that, I like the way this was booked, and I like the way they're booking Briggs, Jensen, and Henley. I just really, really do. Eddie Thorpe versus Dijak. This is the feud that never ends. 56 seconds. Eddie Thorpe is your winner by DQ. I got a lot of nice things to say about both of these guys, but I can't wait until they're doing stuff that isn't with each other. Nate?
Yeah, me either. It seems like their feud is like going on for way too long. You know, Eddie Thorpe, especially, like, you know, he comes in, you know, relatively new character. And I mean, he did a couple other things before he got into the feud with Dijak, but I mean, I really feel like it's kind of time for him to do something else and get you may be involved in like North American title scene or something like that. You know, decent match. Dijak got some color after getting thrown into the steel steps and started bleeding. I was kind of wondering if they were even going to stop the match just due to that. But you know, they let the match continue. Not a whole heck more to really say there. Just I'm really just kind of looking forward for that feud to kind of be over and for them to kind of move on and do something else. What was the other one? Metaphor.
Rick Jensen, Hanley, and Metaphor.
Yep. You know, Metaphor, they're comedic gold. I really, really enjoy what they're doing right now. You know, Noam Dar with his his Heritage Cup and just kind of wanting to hold on to that thing, and it's his baby. It's just it's so good. Briggs, you know, Jensen, Josh Briggs. You know, he had a bit of a, he had his moment to kind of stand out, you know, in the Iron Survivor Challenge. I feel like he, you know, had a pretty decent, a decent showing there, you know, in kind of, you know, lack of a better term, breakout as a singles competitor, you know, at Deadline. I'm wondering how much longer he is destined for this tag team. You know, we've talked about this a bit before. It might have been on the VIP after show or something, but you know, how much longer is he destined for this tag team? You know, Jensen kind of feels like he's holding him back. Felt like that for quite some time. I mean, I feel like I've been talking about Jensen holding him back, or we've all been talking about Jensen holding him back for, I mean, at least a year. I feel like it's kind of time. You know, it's something Bruce always brings up. You know, Briggs was the former Evolve champion, multiple time Evolve champion. So, I mean, he knows how to be a single star, and I'm kind of hoping that's the direction we go with him. You know, obviously I hate to see anybody get left behind, and hopefully this would be a breakout for Jensen as well. But you know. Yeah, at this point, I kind of feel like it's kind of time to get the two of them apart. There we go.
Let's go to Bruce.
So when it comes to Metaphor versus Briggs, Jensen, and Henley, going into this, I said in our group chat, watch, this is Jensen's going to cost them the match, meet the pin here, because I thought after their little bit of contentiousness on Saturday between the three of them that they're going to continue that bit here during the match, and that they wouldn't necessarily turn on him, but maybe after the match they would just leave him in the ring and walk away. Now, they did extend the contentiousness, but that was in the backstage segment a little later where Briggs was talking about now he thinks he's number one contender for the Heritage Cup. And then Jensen said, you know, I hate to burst your bubble, but that's not really your style. You're more of a knock them out kind of guy, not a technical round sort of guy. And Briggs kind of took offense to that and said that not only does he believe in himself, but he wants to push his boundaries and try new things, right? Learn from them. So eventually Jensen relented and agreed to support them. So I wonder if they're going to have Jensen be the one to turn on the other two to keep Briggs a face because of the momentum he's been carrying, and especially coming out of this past Saturday's match. But, you know, like Nate said, I've been saying for a while, Briggs, he knows what it is to be a singles wrestler. That's what he was before he came to NXT. And it's kind of amazing that both he and Henley have kind of developed in NXT at the same pace. So, and I said this about Kiana James and Henley too, but they have really come into their own around the same time. James a little faster than these two, but with Henley, she's at the point now where you want her to bring it back a little bit instead of trying to get more out of her. And so that's a good thing for her. And this feud that she's having with Stratton, that's going back to Halloween Havoc, and her cosplay as F. Stratton, it's seemingly ending next week with their match. And Stratton, I loved Stratton tonight and her little backstage thing with Kelly Kincaid, cutting her off and saying her thing about Henley. She says she's top shelf and she can't even afford to drink top shelf like I can. You know, she's trash, she's garbage, all this stuff. And then she said, okay, I'm done. And then turned it back to Kelly and then walked away before she could even ask her a question. I thought that was just great. So for me, like I said on Saturday, this is one of those matches. It's one of those feuds where it's probably going to be like the match that I'm going to discuss next, where there is no collar and elbow tie-up like we have with Dijak, or not Dijak, but with Dragunov and Corbin on Saturday. So we're going with Dijak and Eddie Thorpe. The other thing about Dijak getting color hard way is they didn't go to black and white. And I don't know if they stopped doing that, but I know the most recent time that I saw blood on NXT, they did go to black and white. So I thought that was an interesting thing there. Maybe it's because it was on the side of the face and it wasn't visible on every shot they did that, and not, you know, across the forehead where it's just all over the face. But they're continuing that angle of the ribs being, or the midsection being compromised after the strap match they had seemingly at this point, what, 2 months ago, because Thorpe was out for a couple weeks to sell the injuries. Come back here, they have the spot in the corner where the turnbuckle explodes off, basically, and then he uses the steel part that they use to connect the turnbuckle to beat on Thorpe, and then he gives him a gut buster across the second turnbuckle. It just, they keep continuing that story, and I thought it was done at this point. But I saw on Twitter earlier that they interviewed Dijak for an exclusive for the online stuff, and he said that this is far from over. I'm just like, oh, great. Both characters who not only need to do something else, but they're also both strongly in need of winning the feud. So how they go about that's going to be interesting. I've had high hopes for Thorpe. I'm pretty sure that Kelly has had too, because he saw basically everything he did in Japan, and there's definitely a lot of talent there. So I'm just hoping that this is somehow used as like a comeback story or something, and Thorpe becomes, you know, as Nate was saying, in that North American Championship level at least for 2024.
Oh boy, NXT has over the years been really good at having somebody say this is far from over, and me going, why? It's already the longest thing that's happened. Like, oh, there was feud between Camacho and the Ascension that went on for like 6 months. It might not have been 6 months, but it felt very, very long. Camacho, the super cool name they gave to Samoan Man. Let's not get bogged down in that. Let's finish this thing. I'm Kelly Wells, and you can find me on social media at SpookyMilk or at SpookyMilk.games. Hey, you can call us next week, 515-605-9345, or just email us like you did, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Bruce?
I'm Bruce Hazel. You can find me at B_D253, my report at the Torch and the VIP side. And I keep forgetting to say this, but mid-November marked 3 years at the Torch for me, and the last basically 2 years at NXT. And I know it was tough for me because I was coming in, I was replacing Tom. Can't ever replace Tom, especially because he was always giving that in-person experience. But I do think that the three of us have developed a great chemistry, and I think it comes through in all the jokes and things that we have with each other. So it's been a good 2 years on the show and 3 years with the Torch, and moving forward, hopefully more.
And in fairness, I have great chemistry with everyone.
God, you're so humble. You're so humble.
The pro wrestler really comes out of Kelly when it comes talking about himself.
I'm a heel. I'm putting myself over first, and time permitting, you guys.
I appreciate it.
Yes, thank you. That's all I ever needed to hear from you.
I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can check out all the things that I do at natelindberg.com. Thank you to Bruce for the kind words, and Kelly, do you know what that means? That means that you've been putting up with me for closer to 5 years now.
Sweet mother grabbing. Five?
We're getting there.
One, two, three,
we're getting
five.
There. It's about four and a half. Before and a half. I know.
That's
before four and a half.
Weird. Yep. Age is weird, folks. Age is a hell of a drug.
As far as I'm concerned, we're in like the 40-some-odd month of 2020, so I hear you.
I can dig that. Yes, folks, I'm Kelly Wells. You hear us next week, and I truly am fond of these guys. I have a really good time, but I will never let them know about that. So don't tell them, and they will be none the wiser. We will see you in seven, folks. Cheers.